Recording live from the Hoban Law Group here in Denver, Colorado, I'm your host, Eric Singular. Welcome to the Hoban Minute.
Today, Bob and I are talking about the future of cannabis marketing, and we are joined by Jeff Boges and Rick Kiley of Soho Experiential. Rick and Jeff, thank you for being here with us this afternoon.
Thanks for having us.
Yeah, pleasure to be here.
Pleasure is all ours here, having you guys on. And before we jump into this conversation around what the landscape of cannabis marketing will look like, whether that be for hemp-derived products, CBD, CBG, CBN, and otherwise, and marijuana products, let's talk a little bit about roots. And we have three folks here, all with a shared connection to the great state of New Jersey, the Garden State. So, Bob, I know you probably have a thought or two to share with these guys about both your upbringing in New Jersey and, of course, the big news, which is that we will see a legal marijuana recreational industry in the state coming forward.
It certainly has been a long time coming. You know, being from New Jersey and recognizing that it is so densely populated, and there is such a demand for cannabis products, particularly in light of the fact that every time I travel back and forth for the holidays or otherwise, everyone you run into has brands and products that are produced in other legal states. It was sort of a non-scientific way to talk about that that demand in the Garden State. It is the Garden State after all, but coming from New Jersey and moving out to the West many years ago, and I know you guys have roots there, or at least have recently planted some roots in the Garden State. What do you see as coming out of that state? How do you see this positioned against some of the other markets that we've seen and that people have just projected are going to go wild in terms of sales and dollars and expansion?
Well, this is Jeff, and I'll just say I think it's the tipping point. I think it's, you know, it is, in my mind, it is the market that will sort of make the rest of the country have to follow suit, because there's going to be a domino effect. There's going to be a lot of money that's going to travel over the border from Pennsylvania and from New York and from, you know, some of the other neighboring states into New Jersey to take part in the legal rec market once it becomes viable. And those markets are not going to want to see those tax dollars leave their states, and they're going to have to follow suit. And I think once you start to see, now you got California, now you got New York, now you've got these huge population centers where it's legal, I just can't imagine a situation where federal legalization or at least sort of acknowledgement that this is going on and that there's money to be made here won't follow suit.
That is interesting, though, that spin of they're not going to want to see the tax dollars go to another state, because what we've seen in the Western United States, and of course we're surrounded here in Colorado by many conservative states, not only do they not want to see sales happen at all, even in the state like Colorado, they complain about the fact that they still have to police the cannabis use by way of, you know, pullovers on highways and things where there aren't cannabis possession. So it's an interesting perspective, but give me your thoughts there.
Yeah, I mean, this is Rick. I think, you know, the tri-state area in particular, there's a little bit of, I don't know, I feel like there's a little bit of friendly rivalries amongst the political leaders. And I know I now live in New York, where there's been conversations about making it legal for adult use here as well. And, you know, they're probably a little bit upset that New Jersey kind of got there first. And I think the will is there, at least in New York and some of these other states. But just the way isn't clear. And I think there's nothing like, the dollar really motivating people to, spur into action. And I think you'll see New York follow suit, very shortly. And I think, you know, the one thing I think about those Western states is that there's a lot more space, you know, there's a lot more geographic area, you know, in between the states, and just, you know, New Jersey, right on top of New York City, it's right on top of New York, right on top of Connecticut, and all these states are really closely combined. So it's, you know, it's 30 minutes to get across the border from Manhattan to New Jersey, and then, you know, 30 minutes back again. And it's it's not going to be hard for somebody to do. So I agree with Jeff. I think you'll see this Northeast corridor, especially since Massachusetts is legal also. You know, I think you'll see all these states, you know, kind of get to this adult use legalization. And, you know, provided the new federal government that comes to place does continue with federal, at least decriminalization, you know, it'll ease up pretty quickly.
Well, and as you think about that market in the Northeast, as I've mentioned, we've seen a lot of these brands that have been just about everywhere, from pens to edibles to concentrates that are branded, and they have been in the Garden State, for example, for a number of years. But as you look at the marketing approach to this thing, and based on your background, what do you think is an effective marketing strategy in the marijuana or the cannabis space going forward, considering that we've seen these brands in those places without legal markets previously? So people have brand awareness, or at least in theory they do. How do you play on that?
Yeah, I think there's sort of two areas there, Rick. Why don't I handle one and you can handle the other? But I think, you know, there's one thing like brand building, and how do we start to look at these brands as being more than just either medicinal or Grateful Dead-ish, and no offense to the deadheads out there, I count myself among the numbers. But then also just how do you get the message out and right now there's so much regulation about messages not crossing state lines, especially across state lines where you might, like in the Colorado situation where you're surrounded by conservative states, you don't want any of that commercial messaging going out. And I think that's a place where experiential is, you know, what we do for a living is very salient. So Rick, why don't you talk about the brand building side, and maybe I'll come back and touch base on how experiential sort of fits the need.
You know, I think I just wanted to touch on something before that. I mean, we've been talking with a lot of different individuals who, you know, talk about the different state regulations and they have to set up different supply chains, et cetera. But when we talk about the marketing side, you know, there's a lot of challenge around that, and people can't use traditional media, even social media, YouTube channels. You know, they get taken down, they get suspended. And it's really hard for brands to have a consistent message. And, you know, when you're trying to build a brand, that sort of being able to have a multi-touch point approach and consistent message is really, really important. People want to be able to find you in all the different channels that they're shopping in. And it's really, really tough to do right now. And, you know, one of the things that, you know, even before you can kind of build a brand, we're finding that, you know, the category itself really has a lot of work to do. You know, Jeff mentioned, you know, the Grateful Dead heads, and, you know, I'm a big fan of fish. They're fish heads, and, you know, it's a big part of the culture. But, you know, we come from this alcohol beverage background, which is lucky enough to have built up a ton of sort of aspirational lifestyle imagery and usage in our history. There are positive images of people associating with the product, and every person that we talk to who's trying to build a brand talks about the biggest challenge is trying to get rid of stoner stigma, when I think that's the phrase that we're using, trying to get rid of it or trying to evolve past it. And the biggest challenge for the category first, you know, we're finding is, you know, how do we go about trying to eliminate that stoner stigma, try to put out good, high quality lifestyle, creative imagery, you know, think about partnering with individuals, influential people who are aspirational and leading aspirational lives, so that people can start building lifestyle brands and putting in a communication strategy that shows that, you know, you could be successful, you could be, you know, and still include this product in your life and help educate people on how to do that and then how to make high quality choices, you know, and all those other things will follow. And Jeff mentioned the type of work that we do is being, you know, in the live engagement, direct face-to-face engagement most often. That's a great way in this heavily restricted sort of space to do that. And I think the restrictions are very, very challenging for people.
Yeah, and I think what we're trying to say is, like, if you create a commercial and it goes across state lines, or you put up a sign that's too close to a state line or people can go across it, it's very difficult to control the exposure to that messaging. Whereas in experiential, we can very accurately target where these experiences happen, whether they happen at the point of purchase or whether they happen in, you know, sort of private, you know, invitation-only experiences, or even if they happen in places where we can basically accurately target the age and, you know, the citizenship, if you will, of the individuals who would attend, we tend not to run into those same issues that you would with more traditional, what we would call above the line messaging. And so we're very excited about experiential's place to play in that role. And I think Rick really kind of nailed it on the head is, you know, also one of the things that experiential is very good at doing is taking categories and brands that have a lot of misinformation, a lot of baggage, and basically demystifying some of those things. And there are people out there who are going to be really interested in cannabis who don't know a thing about it, or are very curious about it, but only know what they learn from watching, you know, Reefer Madness or some other kind of crazy, you know, misinformation kind of highway that's out there. There's a lot of misinformation, and people are, you know, there are people who are curious and want to learn more, and there are people who are terrified of it who probably need to learn more. And that's something, you know, as alcohol marketers that maybe people don't think of, but, you know, there's a lot of alcohol out there that's either expensive or is not something that when it hits your palate that you immediately are like, oh yeah, that's delicious. You have to kind of learn why something is good and how to use it correctly. And that's, again, a place that we feel like we can play very adroitly.
Yeah, I think that makes a lot of sense. And, you know, when I think of the lifestyle and the imagery around alcohol, for example, you know, when I think of beer, I think of beer ads where it's gatherings, it's people on the beach, you know, smiling and laughing. I think of spirits like, you know, bourbons and things of this nature. It's a holiday drink with a friend. It's sitting down to unwind at the end of the day. How do you de-stigmatize the cannabis industry? How do you move it away from the stoner image? And not asking for trade secrets, but how do you paint the image of cannabis use in a way that's akin to what we've become used to on the alcohol side?
Well, that's a $1 million question right there. And if there were a succinct sentence that answered it, I think we'd all be really, really, really wealthy right now. But I mean, it's unfortunately, it requires, I think, what is going to be a painstaking, slow, methodical, and organic process that requires a lot of cooperation. The first thing is, you know, there is so much historical baggage for this category on the marijuana side, on the THC psychoactive side. I mean, we have to remove the idea of the war on drugs and that cannabis is a gateway to, you know, shooting up heroin and robbing banks and you know, all that misinformation that, you know, that I was taught when I was in school. Like, I was taught that marijuana was as bad, if not worse, than cocaine. Like, I was told it was as bad or worse than heroin. Like, these were messages that I was being delivered in my teen years, and they still sit with people, you know, and we have to first, you know, educate people on that. And education, successful education, comes from trusted resources. And most people learn things now. You know, the most successful way to build a brand and the most way that people learn things are from trusted peers, people that they know, that they look up to, and that they want to be like. And, you know, even in the alcohol beverage industry, there's this idea of mentoring. You know, we ran programs for some Scotch whiskey brands for many, many years, and it was built upon this idea of people who aspired to be like their boss, like their like the successful business person, and wanting to know how to drink it, what the rules are, you know, how to order it confidently, and so that it sort of was this thing that they aspired to. So I think the first thing is, you know, having people build brands that are attractive to those people, have that consistent messaging, and then invest in sort of that one-to-one relationship building. I think it also wouldn't hurt if we got, you know, the equivalent of really cool people, you know, imagery in movies, like, you know, instead of Half-Baked, you have people that are cool, like the Rat Pack, that are like, you know, drinking, you know, the way that they were drinking alcohol, you know, Sinatra. You know, we need that sort of, you know, current day modern sort of aspirational figures to, you know, be seen consuming, and but using it in their lifestyle in a way that is not seen as detrimental to their health or to success and high quality living.
Yeah, I think you're going to see a pivot more to where cannabis is going to be seen, frankly, in its various forms, as a healthier way to decompress from the stresses of the day. Because a lot of people, you know, I mean, it's to a degree, I would say that cannabis and alcohol are both forms of self-medication, right? I mean, you people drink alcohol because it tastes good, sure, but they also they drink it because they want to get that buzz. They need to get that little relief from their day, and it's very effective at that. And obviously, if it's done in appropriate quantities, it's actually, you know, it's a good thing. And I think, but you know, you see a lot of people now who see the detrimental side of alcohol, from calories to alcoholism to, you know, to loss of control, you know, to all those things that I think people are now going to be like, I think once you start to see them appreciate the healthier side of cannabis as a way to relieve the stress of the day and to find enjoyment in the present, I think you're going to see a lot of people who are going to want to make that switch. It'll be our job to craft that story in a way that makes it palatable, like Rick said, through influencers, through people who are aspirational. So when you look at them, you don't think Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure. Again, nothing against Bill and Ted, but more about, you know, this is a person that looks like me, that talks like me, that shares my values, and I want to be like them.
I'm just going to go on record, say I'm a Bill guy. You know, a lot of people like Ted Moore. I think Bill made the series.
Hey, Jeff and Rick, the last time that we spoke, I think I'm remembering mm-hmm. this correctly, but, you know, looking at your experience in a tightly regulated industry, your experience doing marketing for wine, spirits, beer, we've also seen other companies, manufacturers, and distributors in that sector jump into the CBD or hemp-derived industry a little bit. And so tell me a little bit about what you've seen as far as these companies, these manufacturers that already, you know, exist in a tightly regulated industry. They're used to dealing with all of these regulatory agencies, all of this oversight, making sure that they're in compliance with a number of different state and federal laws. What have you seen on that end as far as first movers, whether that be for hemp-derived goods or for marijuana goods?
Yeah, I mean, it's a great question. I think, you know, there are some companies that are doing, I think, big in sort of the investment way. So like Constellation Brands has been a client of ours, and they're, you know, one of those very well-established wine companies. They have some spirits brands, but they, you know, they took a big position in Canopy, and I know the Canopy growth, and they're investing in the space. And, you know, so I think they're taking a very like, large sort of like 30,000 foot, you know, view of investing in the industry. And I think it's almost probably more as a hedge as to like ensure that as adult use cannabis grows across the country, that they're part of it. I think we've also been lucky enough, you know, there's a gentleman that we interviewed on our podcast. His name's Keith Villa. He was the guy that crafted the original recipe for Blue Moon beer. And, you know, he started a new brewery recently that's also based in Colorado called Seria Brewing. And he's now making alcohol-free beer that is infused with CBD and in some cases THC. So where I see it, and Jeff, please add in after I'm done here, but I see a lot of like the personnel who we've worked with, both on the sales side and the marketing side, being brought into some cannabis concerns because, as you said, of their know-how of both either supply chain management or the specific regulations around the sales and the retail environment. And so there's a lot of shared knowledge that is directly applicable from that's coming across. I don't have any good corporate examples, Jeff. Maybe you have another.
Well, I was just thinking, I think you're right with the example of Constellation. Miller Brands has also taken a fairly big position in it. And I think you're right that part of that is just the hedge, but I think a lot of them are getting in these various ways, and a lot of them are getting in on the medical side or on the hemp side or CBD side. But the real cherry here is the rec use. And I think they know that. I think they see it as both a threat to their, you know, as I was just talking about with the transference from people from going from alcohol consumption to going to cannabis consumption. But, you know, obviously it's sort of a ground floor opportunity. This will be a sort of a once in a lifetime experience for us as marketers, as we see an industry that doesn't exist 10 years ago and 10 years from now it'll be as big as the wine and spirits industry in the United States. Its rise will be meteoric. And that's not lost on these big corporations. They want to be part of that. And I'm sure that they're, and for every one of those corporations that's actually taken a stance in it, the other ones have plans too. They're just waiting for some of the other stuff to get worked out.
Yeah, and we haven't even talked about tobacco, which Jeff and I actually do not work in, but most of the large tobacco industries, are ready to jump in if they aren't already involved. As well, that like pre-roll business, I think, fits, quite naturally into their supply chains. And I think some of these, agricultural, companies, are getting involved as well. And we know that hemp will be a big cash crop, and it's going to grow as well.
When you think about this, all of the different aspects of this plant, and all of the different product lines that could come out of it, whether it's a spirits line, something that's more in line with a tobacco experience, a wellness product, a health or energy product. It really it runs the gamut, and it creates a number of different challenges that are all restricted by regulations. So what I was going to ask is, what is the future then, or the present of, if I want to bring a cannabis brand to the marketplace, if I'm Canopy Growth, and I want to cut my losses and put something out there in the marketplace. They've had alliances with people like Martha Stewart to create CBD brands, but what is the way that you convince consumers that your product is quality, consistent, and represents that, that vibe that creates a lifestyle brand? I've seen it all over the map, and I've seen it largely be ineffective. And I just don't know if there's a straight answer given the regulatory uncertainty.
Yeah. I mean, again, you're asking a question that doesn't have like a silver bullet answer. I think, it's funny. We have a few friends who are entrepreneurs in the alcohol, beverage and cannabis space. And people start by looking for the white space of the opportunity, and I think, what lifestyle brands need to kind of clearly, do well is figure out who they want to be building. If you're going to take it and do the time to do it right, who do they want to be building a brand for? We don't live in a day and age where you can build something that's for everybody. So you need to sort of focus on the consumer, the end user, and what their need is that you are meeting. Is it a medicinal product? Is it a wellness-based product that's for someone who's just looking for balance in their life, wants to take like a little microdose, towards the end of the day to take the edge off and ease into their yoga and decompression routine? Is it for someone who is really trying to like elevate and enhance some other form of experience? And what do they do? And you have to like clearly define who you are creating this product for, and then the challenge with cannabis is that there's not only like all the different formulations that you can have that produce different effects. There's also all these different intakes that can lengthen or shorten the effect. And people need to be educated about so much. So I think, you know, you need to sort of focus on creating the product that is right for the people that you want to reach, and then try to get that perfect. Get that perfect. Invest in your good, great package that it will attract the people that you want to meet. Like, packaging should not be overlooked. There's a reason why people who make alcohol beverage brands spend so much money on creating the perfect bottle. It's so much money and so much goes into it. And that's really important. And you need to get these sort of things right from the get-go. And then you need to find your message, and you need to just hammer that same message over and over and over and over until you're sick of it, you know. And, you know, one, like a saying that I say in the marketing world is, you know, as soon as you're getting tired of something that you're saying, like you're saying it so much that you're sick of it, that is just about the time where people are maybe just starting to get the message. Like, you know, so like that is like the cycle we need to go through. And, you know, one of the things that's important in this environment is that the gatekeepers are extremely, extremely important. In a regulated industry like alcohol beverage, bartenders and retail owners, liquor store owners, they hold tremendous amounts of influence. And the same is going to be the case here. You know, people go to bud tenders and ask for their recommendation. So the starting play for these brands should always be to ensure that the people who are going to be talking to the consumer face-to-face are really knowledgeable about their product, and do not underestimate the amount of time and money that you need to invest in ensuring that they can be an excellent advocate for your brand. Those are some sort of like, you know, tools that just have to be put in place if you're going to build a lifestyle brand. And then this day and age, we have to focus on building an authentic brand story. People today who are buying products, they're not buying things that are just trendy for trend's sake. They want to know the story behind it. People are really savvy. They know what brands stand for. They know if you give contributions to charities as a company, and they want to buy based on what your brand stands for and the value that it offers them. So I think there's a lot of things to kind of get right. And then I'm sure there's a lot of timing and luck and all those sorts of other different things you can do to accelerate it.
But I think, you know, part of what, if there's a real parallel here with cannabis, and especially again, I'm more focused on rec use more than CBD or on hemp. But I would say, look at wine and the way wine use has matured in the last 30 years in the U.S. Where, you know, when you first, you know, 20, 30 years ago, if we spoke to any of our friends from France or from Italy, they would scoff at the American wine market, and they really didn't take it very seriously. And if you looked at the way wine was marketed, you know, I mean, I remember my parents coming home with that big jug of Gallo table wine, you know, and it was sort of an undifferentiated large format. It was, you know, it was like buying a sack or like buying a pound of marijuana. But then what you saw was this, you know, where we've gotten to today, where there's this huge fragmentation, where there are thousands of brands. And I think you're going to see you're going to see cannabis go through a similar situation where there's going to be thousands of brands. And people will start, I think, to start to look at their cannabis purchase by the type. And they're going to become more savvy about the type and what they like. So, you know, and I'm not just talking about sativas and things like that. They're going to have a pretty good idea of what terpenes they want. And I think you're going to start to see people figure that out relatively quickly. And then there's going to be exploration within those, you know, styrations, within those levels. But eventually what you'll see and what happens in wine, and why I think it's a good metaphor for what you'll see happen, is you'll start to see those mass brands that really start to come out and be bigger than the category, which is, you know, I mean, most people who are wine connoisseurs aren't really into the mass brands, but that by far, in a way, drives the most volume in the United States. So the Yellowtails of the world, you know, the Josh Sellers of the world, those brands, they sell millions of cases a year. And I think that's where you're going to see a similar situation in cannabis, where these cannabis brands start to mean something. Now you're still going to have your people out there who really know what they're talking about, what they're doing, and they're going to be collectors. It wouldn't even surprise me If you, instead of wine cellars, you're going to see people with, you know, with humidors that are filled with really kind of crazy amounts of different, you know, cannabis. And people are going to be like, oh, come on down and I'll introduce you to something neat. And so you're going to see much more of that high end differentiation at that level. But I think, again, my personal opinion, and this is my opinion only, is that watch wine or look at the wine track, and then you're going to see how the cannabis industry develops.
I want to touch on one other thing before we wrap here. Just the idea that it is still important for companies to focus and invest in marketing during a pandemic. I know that you guys were resilient through the 2008 recession, and it's something that Bob and I touch on often, is that this industry, the cannabis industry, came into existence during the recession and has had a lot of folks, even this year, talking about whether or not the industry is recession-proof in the backdrop of COVID-19 and the resulting economic downturn. So if you will, just give me a few thoughts on for folks out there who are listening, who are on the fence about what they want to do with their marketing budget in 2021, or whether it's a place to cut, what would you advise?
Well, we're marketers, so you never want to cut your marketing budget. But I think the point that you raised is good. You know, we've been lucky around. Our company has been around since 2005, and during 2008, we were really kept afloat by one client, which was the Macallan Scotch Whiskey. And they recognized they had something that was working, and they invested heavily during that period of time, 2008, 2009. And pretty much almost every other brand went radio silent. So, you know, if you are able to, and not everyone is, but if you're able to invest during a downturn, you know, it's kind of like a cyclist who is really good on the climbs. You know, that's where everyone else sort of slows down. And you can really accelerate and jump ahead of people in terms of the number of people that you reach, the awareness levels, and if trial is something that's part of your game as well, you can really get your product in front of a lot more people. You'll find that the organizations looking to support you are more willing to help you stretch your dollar, and because there's such a void of other things going on in other activity, you can get greater share of attention. And what happened with the Macallan, through the 2010s, pretty much they had a decade of double digit growth because of that investment. And I think if you go back and look at other examples of companies and brands that are able to invest during downturns, you'll see that they come out of the end just starting to point, like a rocket ship, and then the rocket ship will take off. I think also people, consumers, also really respond to brands that are willing to sort of reach out during this time, and if you were able to, have a brand connect with you, the connection would also be stronger. That's just a supposition on my part.
I do think that most people think that if a brand is reaching out and, it's providing them a value positive experience in a tough time, they're not going to forget that. And clearly people are switching now, to cannabis on a far, far, I saw an article this morning where, that some 49% of people that in the United States in a particular survey are switching from alcohol to cannabis for their daily, for their nightly, calm down. I think if you can reach out to those people now and forge a relationship, that relationship will be something that is, it will have staying power far and beyond the end of the recession.
Yeah. Excellent thoughts, guys. And it's really been a pleasure to get your kind of perspective on all of this, and let us pick your brain, because these are issues that a lot of folks out here in this industry who are trying to figure out how to differentiate their product, their brand, their company, it's incredibly important to them. And for anybody who wants to keep up with Jeff and Rick, in addition to the work you guys do at Soho Experiential, you are also podcast hosts, and they have the podcast The Green Repeal, which can be found at SohoExp.com. It's a real pleasure to have you guys on this afternoon, and we look forward to getting to the other side of this pandemic and to hear from you guys again in the near future.
I look forward to getting out to Colorado and skiing with you guys.
Thanks for the opportunity. It's great talking to you both.
Likewise, guys. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the Hoban Minute. Do you have any ideas for episode topics or guests? We would like to hear from you. Reach out to us at media@hoban.law and stay tuned for more on the Hoban Minute.